Wild animals don't believe in long goodbyes. They disappear without a rustle of leaves. A few years ago, we lost the foxes. In the part of the forest that went downhill to a stream, there were particular knots of trees where foxes flitted through the undergrowth as we passed at roughly the same time every day, walking our dog. Some mornings they would stand motionless, their eyes upon us, as if tied to a ritual, awaiting our arrival. Our dog raced off after them. Yet, though the foxes took flight in response, they went only a token distance, probably having come to the conclusion that the chase meant nothing, or there was a shared awareness of their mutual curiosity, an acknowledgement of kinship, the instinct that perhaps they were closer to each other than they could know. At dusk or deep in the night, the foxes often called, and in response, our dog sat up very straight, raised her head to the skies, and joined them. A heartbreaking sound that was not a howl or a whine, but a song of longing, the call of one wild being to another. Their echoing cries traveled across the darkness, one creature in the jungle, the other inside a house. Then came the laying of a massive concrete waterline that was to snake up from the stream to the highest ridge of our town. The pipes were to traverse great swaths of the forest to reach army units stationed in barracks on the next ridge. Reservoirs were to be built along the way. A labor force of half-starved men in threadbare shirts was offloaded from trucks, and they camped in the woods in shanties that kept them neither fully warm nor altogether dry. Nevertheless, they made a life there and could be heard chatting, cooking, brawling, singing. They washed with water they stored in a metal drum at the forest's edge, cut dead branches from the trees to make pitifully small fires for warmth. And at the end of each day, they cooked a big pot of mishmash for their meal. Trucks thundered down with construction goods. Drills went for stone and rock with machine gun bursts of sound. It took 2 years for the work to finish. Months after the men and trucks had gone, and it had rained a few times, blades of grass began to spear their way up from the heaps of rubble and earth that were left behind. When another year or more had passed, the forest began to feel less ravaged, though we noticed that the ethereal banks of autumnal immortelle were gone, and the golden coreopsis that lit up the ground had been driven out by a brash weed that was colonizing every slope. Something fundamental had been altered. Nevertheless, we did expect the foxes to return, cautiously perhaps, testing the ground, taking their time. But we were sure they would be back. Those small, brown, dog-like creatures who had watched us, impassive and bright-eyed. We looked for them every day, going down the old routes we had abandoned in our attempt to stay clear of the pipework. For many months, we waited for a glimpse of fox eyes curtained by foliage. Now we have given up hope. Sometime over those years, who knows why or when, the flying squirrels that glided from oak tree to cedar and then scampered busily up tree trunks in the half-dark, minding their own business as we spied on them, they too vanished. Was it because of the trucks and the water pipes and the camp of the workforce? Or was it because we had lopped a few of the overhanging cedar branches that threatened our house? Could an animal's sense of home be so fragile that the slightest change in its environment sent it scurrying elsewhere?